the example of the 5-4 theory at one loop, doing just looking at the first quantum effects, the effects, the most important quantum effects if h bar is small, which are the one loop contribution. And we saw why we need renormalization. That's because if we express, for instance, the 2-point function as a function of the parameter which are of the action which are which we put in the functional integral, we got a divergent term when the high energy cutoff was sent to infinity. But when expressed, when the 2-point function was expressed in terms of the physical mass, then everything was fine because we could define, we got a 2-point function which was finite. So this was the idea of renormalization. So today I'm going to discuss the rest of the theory at one loop. So, and I will go to the important issue of coupling constant renormalization, which in some sense is the core of the theory of renormalization. So are we doing renormalization? Of the 5-4 theory. Continued. So I am in 4 dimensions. And I consider the one loop approximation. And well, perhaps at the end of this, let me give here, during the talk, I will begin to receive for good renormalized theory. And I will give the various ingredients during the course. Okay. So we started from a theory which had an action of the following form. S phi equal 1/2 of d mu phi squared phi 4. And we saw that if we start from this action, where this is will be called the bare action, namely it will be the parameter which are in the functional integral, we saw that the physical mass of the theory gets renormalized. So because of quantum effects, it's not the square, m physical mass squared is not m squared, but there is a contribution of the form g 1 over 2 times this TRM, this function TRM, plus two loop effects, where T of m was just the amplitudes of this of this diagram. And we have seen that it was divergent. If I am not mistaken, it was something like there was a 1 over lambda squared, and there was a minus, a correction, m squared over 4 pi squared logarithm of lambda squared over m squared, and then finite term, term of order 1 when lambda, so this is what's happening when lambda goes to infinity. See? And we saw that from that, we have the idea of the renormalization of mass. Mass, because if we invert this relation and we write, we choose a mass squared in this action, which is of the form m physical mass squared minus g 1/2 t of mass physical squared plus term of order g squared, then the two-point function of the theory namely, what's happening if when I'm computing phi of x, y of y, or its Fourier transform, in using this action with m squared given by this relation, when you consider it as a, let us call it, when you consider it as a function, so let me call this the two-point function. So it's a function of x and y. There is a two to mean that I have two fields. And of course, it's a function of G and of M physical squared. And we saw that this is finite in the sense that this is, of course, of the form, well, in Fourier transform, this is 1 over P squared plus M physical squared plus term of plus, and that's it. So it's something which is finite. At order g squared. So this is finite. It's finite when lambda goes to infinity. And so you see, if you express that, this suggests that in fact the receipt to construct a renormalized theory, a finite theory, is not to use to start from an action which is expressed, which is just given with coefficient by given by the physical parameter, but something where the action is different and you have to adjust the parameter in the action. So that's the basic idea of renormalization. So one receipt that, let me, yes? You had a question?
What's at the bottom right-hand corner?
That's because when I compute this, I get 1 over p squared plus m physical, and that's it. At order g squared. Remember, there was a term of order g proportional to this diagram. But if I reabsorbed it in the definition of a mass, then I get something which is finite because it's expressed in terms of m physical, which is finite. And that's it.
I'm sorry, I thought you said that was to second order in G. But if that were to second order in G, then wouldn't we have plus order G cubed?
Yeah.
But that's as order G squared?
No, I'm working at first order in G.
Okay.
Sorry, so up to the second order in G, this is finite. So,
excuse me.
Yes?
So when you write, first you write the relation of the big the capital M using the small m, and then
yes,
you use the capital M to
yes
write small m. But the argument in T becomes capital M.
The argument of what?
Argument of T, G,
Y, yes,
T.
Yes, and that's because the relation between M, little m, the bare mass, and capital M, the physical mass, the difference is of order G. So this, since this term is of order G, I can, if I invert this relation and rewrite T of M as T of capital M, then I made the difference is of order g squared, so it's absorbed into this relation. So this relation is equivalent to this relation. Simply, the term of order g squared are different. But I'm working at one loop.
He's asking whether or not there should be an m squared versus an m
squared.
M squared. Why the argument of t change from the small m to the capital M squared? What is the argument of t, tm? The argument changed.
Ah, I see. I'm sorry. I didn't understand your question. Yes, it's just a misprint. Yeah, so it's T of little m and... Yeah, I'm very sorry. That was a mistake. Okay. Ah, sorry. Of course. Okay, so you see, the basic idea is, in fact, already here, to replace the physical mass by a parameter which is expressed in terms of the physical mass in the action. So now let us go to a four-point function. And hooping constant. Normalization. So we have seen that in the four-point function is given by at leading order by this diagram, which is over G. So there is a factor minus G. Okay? And then you have contribution of order minus G squared. And you have three diagrams. This diagram and this diagram. There is a factor of 1/2. And what I'm represent by this diagram is just the irreducible. So what I'm writing here is the irreducible four-point function. And I'm so that I will call gamma 4. Okay? So it's a component of the irreducible four-point function. I'm expressing it in Fourier space, so in impulsion space. So here I have some momenta P1, P2, P3, and P4. Coming? Yes?
I just want to check, since I'm still trying to get a handle on the notation.
Yes.
The gamma 4 is the generating function of the irreducible.
I have not finished what it is. So let me finish to explain what I mean by gamma 4, and then.
Sorry, can I just clarify? So the bare mass diverges.
Yes.
And then this Tm diverges, and whereas the physical mass is the diverging piece with plus another diverging piece,
yes.
And together they become a non-diverging piece.
Yes.
Okay.
Yes. Okay. So let me go back to this. So the sum of diagram here is a function. It depends on the four momenta p1, p2, p3, p4. So these are four momenta. The pi's are four momenta. It is given by this the sum of the diagrams. Here it is the same impulsion which goes into this. And in fact, this. Of course, the irreducible four-point function, when you express it in impulsion space, contains a delta function. So it contains a factor 2 pi over 4 delta of p1 plus p2 plus p3 plus p4. This is a conservation of momenta. And therefore, what the important part is the part which depends, in fact, only on three of the momenta that I will call gamma 4 with a bar. Just the bar indicates that, or tilde, I think. In my lecture notes, it's a tilde, so let me call it K. So this is a function of P1, for instance, P2, and P3. P4 be equal to minus P1 plus P2 plus P3. Okay? And this this represents is a diagrammatic representation of this function, this four-point function, where I take into account the fact that the momenta are conserved. Okay? And this function, of course, this function gamma tilde 4 is given by minus g. This is the contribution of this diagram, the vertex. And then I have the sum of those three diagrams. So I have a factor plus g squared. I have a factor 1/2, which comes from the diagrammatic of the feminine diagrams. And here you recognize the bubble diagrams that we discussed yesterday. So here, these bubble diagrams depends on the momenta P1 plus P2. So I get a definite function P of P1 plus P2. These diagrams, in this diagram, it's P1 and P4, which goes inside the bubble. So this is P of P1 plus P4. And finally, the last diagram, it's the same, but it is P1 and P3, which enter the bubble. So this is B of P1 plus P3. Okay? And the function B of P, which represents the Feynman amplitude associated to this diagram. So this is the Feynman amplitudes associated to these diagrams is, for instance, given, so remember, P is the four momenta which enters through the loop. So this was given, for instance, by an integral over V4K over 2 pi to the power of 4, 1 over K squared plus M squared times 1 over P plus K squared plus M squared. And we have seen that it has a neutral divergence, but it is logarithmic. So it has a factor of the form 1 over 4 pi squared logarithm of lambda squared, yes, is plus some finite term. So it has a logarithmic divergence. Yes?
I still don't understand just what gamma 4 is.
You don't understand what it is or why?
What it represents, what it is. So I see that we start with diagrams and we map to a mathematical expression that's gamma 4. And we use gamma 4 within, or sorry, gamma tilde 4, and we use gamma tilde 4 within gamma 4. But what exactly is gamma 4?
Well, gamma 4 is just the contribution of the irreducible part of the four-point function. That's the object that you have you consider when you compute the four-point function. Remember, I don't have the picture here, but remember what we had. When we were computing, we are interested in computing the vacuum expectation value of a product of four operators. We have seen that it is given by a sum of Feynman diagrams. The first one, well, if I am interested into the connected part, connected diagrams, you know that. The first part is these diagrams, and then we had two kinds of diagrams like that, at one loop, plus the same diagram where you attach this loop to the other part. And then we had this diagram plus three other contributions. You see? Where this propagator represents 1 over p squared plus m squared. This piece represents 1 over p squared plus m squared squared times t of m. So this is, in fact, this is part of the propagator we were interested in yesterday. And so this part and this part are the irreducible part of the which you have to compute when you are interested in the four-point function. So I know already to compute this and this. I know how to make the propagator finite at one loop, but I don't know yet whether I can make the parts, these diagrams plus those diagrams, which represent the interaction.
Why isn't the tadpole and propagator in our expression for the four-point function?
Because they are already taken into account in the contribution of the two-point function. Remember, the two-point function is these diagrams plus this diagram, and this I know how to make this finite. I know that mass renormalization makes this finite. Therefore, I know that if I do the mass renormalization, when I compute the four-point connected diagrams, connected functions, then this plus this is finite. This plus corresponding, so all the legs which are attached to the contribution of the legs which are attached to this irreducible part are finite.
So when we say above, this is the irreducible four-point function, what we actually mean is this is the part of the irreducible four-point function that is not present in our expression for the two-point function.
No, because there are no part of the irreducible, there are no part. There is no, the irreducible two-point function doesn't play a role when you compute the four-point function. It has already been subtracted. You see what I mean?
I thought the tadpole diagram was supposed to be in the four-point function, but we're just ignoring
no,
it.
No, no, no. It's in the four-point function, but it is not in the irreducible four-point function. It's just that we separate. These diagrams into parts, and what is attached to the legs, that's already put in the two-point function, and we are interested in the irreducible part, which by definition we call the diagrams of the irreducible four-point function. That's a part we do not know yet how to manage. Okay, and it is given by this sum of diagrams. Okay? Okay, so and so you see that this has a divergence, but you see immediately that this, where is the pointer? You see immediately that the same kind of trick will work, because here you have the three-level contribution to the irreducible four-point function, which is from 2G. And here you have the one-loop contribution to the four-point functions, which contains the logarithmic ultraviolet divergence. But this divergence is just proportional to log. So you have here a G, and here you have a G squared times a log. So you expect that by the same trick, we can redefine a physical coupling constant which contains the dangerous term. So you see from this formula, the fact that the divergence is just proportional to a log, you expect that renormalizing the coupling constant will solve our problem. But we have to be more careful and to define. So, now I will define, and so this was medium, so let us put it here. Let me put the three here. And from now on, I will concentrate on the massless 5-4 theory for convenience. So the massive case is a bit more complicated. And massless 5-4 theory means that I consider a theory where the physical mass squared is equal to zero. So mass by massless, I don't mean a theory where the bare mass is equal to zero, because I know that if the bare mass is equal to zero, the physical mass is positive and very large. But I consider a theory where the physical mass is equal to zero, so it has a massless particle in its spectrum. Yeah? And that's for convenience, but also because you see the core of what's going on. Okay? So then this condition, if I want to enforce this condition from what we discussed yesterday, this means simply that the two-point function of the theory and more exactly the irreducible two-point function gamma 2 of p, which is given by this diagram, the diagram I drew here, this diagram, well, it's p squared plus m squared plus this diagram plus etc. I want it to be 0 when p is equal to 0, because that's the condition I enforce. Okay? And if I do that, in order to do that, so the two-point function of the theory must have a pole, well, it's not exactly a pole in that case, at p squared equals 0. So the inverse of the two-point function, which is the irreducible two-point function, must be zero, must vanish at p equals 0. Okay? And I know how to do that, because I know what to do. In order to do that, it means that the physical mass has to be equal to 0. Namely, I know that this means that the bare mass, m squared, has to be equal to 0, the physical mass, minus g, 1/2, 1 over 4 pi squared, lambda squared. Okay? So it has to be large and negative, but m squared, but this, okay. So it has to be 0 at leading order. This is at 3 level. And this is at one loop level. You see? And with this, I know that the physical theory passes. Okay? So now, so this is the first, and now I considered what is the four-point function. And so now, in fact, let us go back to this case. If the theory is massless, then the bubble diagram, which is B of P, is given by there is no mass in here in that case. The mass is 0, so this is d for k over k over 2 pi squared, 1 over k squared, 1 over p squared plus m squared, plus, p plus k squared. Okay, this is the incoming momenta, and this is the internal loop momentum. Okay, and so you see here you have only, this is a function which depends only on a momentum scale, which is p. But remember, k has to be smaller than lambda in the interval. So it means that it is divergent like 1 over 4 pi squared log of lambda squared. But remember what we said yesterday. Mathematically, it doesn't make sense to speak of the log of an energy squared. So we have to divide in the log lambda squared by another energy scale. And the only energy scale available, since we are in the masses theory, is the external momenta. So in fact, we know from the calculation that this behaves like lambda squared divided by the square of the four momenta. Yes?
Yeah, when you say the mass is pi 4 theory, do you mean small m is 0 or big m?
No, no. By massless, I mean that the big m is 0.
So in this case, small m is not necessarily 0.
No, no. We know it is not 0 from the
calculation. So but how can you write bp that way? With a small m to be 0.
That's because... that's because of the same trick. Because when I'm computing this, this is the term of order g squared. So at order g squared, if the mass is 0 plus something of order g, to set m equals 0 or m equals something different from 0 is the same. So at order g squared, this makes no difference. But for the moment, let us just look at this formula. So I take this bubble when the mass is equal to 0 here. Mass equals 0. And I get a formula like that. Okay, then of course you have some constant. Some constant C, but it's an important. An important. And it depends on how we define the regulator, the ultraviolet regulator. Okay? So you see that the important part is that. When this is, of course, an expansion when lambda goes to infinity, so when lambda goes to infinity, but then you have subdominant term. So when lambda goes to infinity, this the amplitude of this Feynman diagram, which is a single bubble, is logarithm of lambda squared divided by p squared. You see? And therefore, you see that the four-point function, if we do this is the four-point function, if we do this theory, is g minus g squared. There is 3 over half. There is 1 over 4 pi squared. And then you have a logarithm of lambda squared over p1 plus p2 squared plus logarithm of lambda squared over p1 plus p3 squared plus logarithm of lambda squared over p1 plus p4 squared. Okay? And you see that here you have a divergence, but if you assume that, in fact, it is a quantity with that g, it is a quantity which is defined as that g is equal to some quantity which I will call g renormalized plus g renormalized square times 3 over 2 times 1 over 4 pi squared times logarithm of lambda squared. And that, and I take the limit lambda goes to infinity g fixed. Then obviously this term, this log of m, cancel this log of m here. and the four-point function is ultraviolet finite up to terms of order gr squared. Yes?
So I see how we have been inverting expressions to solve for the bare coupling or bare parameters in terms of physical parameters.
Yes.
But when you inverted some expression, it looks like, to solve for g, the bare g, what exactly were you inverting? I see the g squared 3/2 up above, but why it looks like that whole thing is supposed to equal zero, as though gamma tilde equals zero and we were solving that equation for g.
Gamma. I think I will answer your question just by continuing my lecture, because I was going precisely to see what this corresponds to in a more precise way. Okay, so this is a mathematical observation, but the question is what physically, what does it mean? Okay, and what it means is just that. In fact, if you think about things, the physical coupling constant, in theory, is something that you measure. So it's something, it's come out from the measurement of some interaction process. It's not something which comes out from your brain. It's something you look at a physical system where you have particles interacting. You build an experiment, you build an accelerator, you send particles, they collide, and you see how they collide. So in particular, this measurement process is, for instance, you are making a collision. So you are sending two particles, and you are computing diffusion, scattering cross section. Okay? As a function of the, so you send particles, they interact, and you are computing what are the scattering cross section for the scattering process, as a function of the angles, and as a function of the energy of the particles. So the two parameters when you are making a two-particle scattering experiment is the energy. You have two parameters. You have the energy of the particles in the center mass frame, and you have the angle of diffusion. Okay? And that's, I presume, what you have discussed in detail in the QFT 1 course. You send two particles with some energy in the frame of energy, and you see what is the probability that they are diffused with an angle theta. See? And the strength of the interaction is measured by the amplitudes, the probability that they diffuse for some given angle. And so, for instance, you can define a coupling constant. You can define what is the physical coupling constant out of the diffusion. So scattering cross section for a fixed angle, for example, an angle of pi over 2. And it depends on the energy. So this measurement, the important point is that this measurement depends on the energy E of the experiments. Yes?
So I'm quite confused. How did the 3 over 2 come in the
gamma
tilde?
Could you speak a bit louder? Sorry.
Gamma tilde alpha. Gamma tilde alpha. In front of the dots. Like, gamma tilde alpha, yeah.
Here?
No.
Gamma 4, yeah.
Yes.
So the 3 over 2 over there?
Yes.
How did it come?
So?
Three over two.
I am sorry. There is no 3/2. I'm very, very sorry. There is a. It was the sum of the three terms. Obviously, no. There is a 1/2. I'm very sorry. Yes, that's an obvious mistake. It's the same as the 1/2. Yes. Sorry. Okay. So let us come back to this discussion. The definition of a physical complete constant depends on the energy at which you are measuring your scattering cross section. So this is a physical definition, but this is equivalent to state that, in fact, when, in the same way that the physical mass was defined by the point at which the two-point irreducible function has a zero, here, in my definition, in my model, 5-4 massless theory, we can define the physical or renormalized coupling constant. How do we define it? We can define it by the value of the irreducible four-point function for a given energy process. So we can define the physical complete constant, GR. By definition, it will be the value of the irreducible four-point function of the theory for some reference choice of the momenta. So for some P1, P2, P3, which serves as a reference. F. So we define the physical or renormalized coupling constant as a value of the four-point function at a given reference choice points, the given reference impulsions. Okay, so we have to choose. And the simplest way, since we have four impulsions, is, for instance, we choose P1 plus P2 reference squared equal some energy squared mu squared, and P1 plus P3 squared equals the same, and P1 plus P4 squared. So we choose a given reference impulsions, which means we choose a reference energy scale or mass scale, mu. See? And that's an example. That's an example, but that's simplest because it's completely symmetric. You see? Yes? So we choose a reference energy scale that I call mu. And in fact, there is no way to define what is a renormalized coupling constant without choosing an energy mass scale mu, because Because remember that we are in a massless theory. So in a massless theory, there are no a priori scale. And if, for instance, if you were trying to measure your scattering process at zero momentum, then you would get a log of zero, so it's divergent. Yes?
Trying this way, how do you choose the reference to one PD?
I choose it.
But in case, say, I mean, we define the GR in
yes.
case.
Yes.
In case of this, right?
Yes.
Does it, I mean, for different P1, P2, P3 reference you choose, does it give the same value of gamma 4 to them?
No. Oh, no, I mean, they give the same. No, if you choose.
So if I choose a different set of those parameters.
Yes.
So if I get a different number.
Yes.
So then you cannot define a universal GR, right?
No, but that's the point. GR is not universally defined. Well, GR means renormalized coupling constant. The point is that the coupling constant, what you call the coupling constant of your theory, depends on the energy scale at which you measure it. And that's something which is physical. When in experiments, for instance, at the LHC or at SLAC, because it was this effect, I think, was discovered in Stanford around the 70s. When they were doing experiment of collision between electrons, they discovered that the strength of the interaction between quarks inside the nuclei was depending on the energy at which you were sending electrons on protons. So it means that if you make an experiment of collisions, for instance, between electrons, imagine you send an electron and a positron, that's what's going on in some experiment, some accelerator. You made a collision between electron and positron to see the strength of the electromagnetic force between electron and positons, or between two electrons. If you make the experiment at an energy scale of the order of the electron mass, or of the EV, or the MEV, or of the GEV, or at the TEV, in fact, you get a different value from the experiment, from the strength of the interaction. Simply because scattering cross-section do depend on energies, in general. There is no reason for the scattering cross-section not to depend on the energy. And therefore, when you define what is the physical complete constant in a physical theory, for in physical process, you must specify what the energy you choose, at which energy you measure your, you see?
But when we calculate the real scattering energy in cross-section, right?
Yes.
It's not just GR, there's some more integration which depends on the energy scale, right?
Okay, let me go on, and you will see. For the moment, I have not calculated anything. I have just said, okay, I define what I call, this is a definition. I choose an energy scale, and once I have chosen an energy scale, I define what is the physical coupling constant of my theory. So here is the first receipt. Choose a reference energy scale mu, which will be called renormalization energy or mass scale. Okay? And that's something, in fact, implicitly you always do that when you do a physical experiment to extract some physical quantity. You do an experiment and you do it at some energy, using particles with some energy. If the particle has no energy, they don't move, you cannot make an experiment. Okay. So this is the first receipt, which is implicit in many, many calculations, but which is there. You see? And so now let us go on. You see already that in order to construct my quantum field theory, I needed the mass in the action was not the mass, the physical mass. So the second receipt is that I start from a theory which is defined, for instance, by a functional integral, regularized, so theory, with an ultraviolet regulator lambda, because I'm trying to construct a theory, so I start with a regulator, and an action S phi, which will be on the general form D4X. It will contain, by usual terms, grad phi squared, and phi squared in the action. But we have already seen that in order to obtain a theory with a massless phi theory, the coefficient in the front of the phi 4 term must be different. So here, let me call it B. Okay? I suspect that the parameter I have to put for the coupling constant in front of phi 4 is not the physical coupling constant. So let me add an coefficient C here, and let me add the coefficient A here. So I start from a theory using an action like that, which means that I'm computing things in the functional integral using this action. And let me call this action the renormalized action, because that's the action I use to construct a renormalized theory. Let me, this is the front, yes, okay. So this means that I'm going to use this action to compute correlation function of the theory. Yes?
Yes, I'm sorry, this might be a minor quibble, but the two times you wrote out the expression for the tilde, for gamma tilde 4,
yes.
It seems you switched signs.
I did switch sign. Oh, yes. I'm very sorry. That's because, once again, there is a stupid misprint.
I think it's a plus here. There is a minus here. I'm very sorry. This is, I don't know why I made this stupid mistake. So this is the correct expression. This is the expression which is in my notes. Yes, thank you very much. I'll see you. Yes?
And for the definition of GR there on the left board?
Yes.
So why is the second GR not G?
Once again, because the second GR depends on G by term of order G. So the difference between GR and G in this term would be a term of order G Q. But I'll go on. So let me go back here. So I start from a theory with an ultraviolet regular, an action which has this general form. But I don't know yet what A, what B, and what C I should use. But this means that, for instance, that what I want to compute is expectation value of phi operator using this renormalized action. I will call this renormalized expectation value. So this is just vacuum expectation value of products of field operator using this action, and they are defined as usual as 1 over the R times integral d phi exponential of minus 1 over h bar of SR of phi times phi, where the R is just this functional integral. This will be the correlation function. Functions of the renormalized theory. Okay, so this is the receipt. Now, we already have seen that the first receipt was And fourth, that the physical mass is equal to zero. And so we have seen that this is done by assuming that the two-point function at p equals zero is equal to zero. And we have seen that this implies that you have to choose as b. You have to adjust b, given by this factor. So now our fourth step is fix GR by saying that it is equal to the irreducible four-point function at a choice of reference frame. Okay. At the I reference, roughly speaking, proportional to the renormalization energy scales. So this fixes B. This fixes the coefficient B. And as we shall see, this fixes the coefficient A. This fixes the coefficient C. This fixes the coefficient C because if I do that, you see that what you have to choose is precisely G equal GR plus GR squared 3 over half 1 over 4 pi squared log mu squared, but divided by mu squared. Because if I choose that G, which is the coefficient B here, is defined by this. So this fixes that C equals GR plus GR squared 3 half 1 over 4 pi logarithm of lambda squared of your mu squared plus term for the GR cube. Then, if I do that, gamma 4 of P, of the PIs, is simply given by GR minus GR squared, 1 half, 1 over 4 pi squared, logarithm and when the log of lambda here cancels the log of lambda here, if I replace g by g here and g by g here, so what I found is logarithm of mu squared divided by p1 plus p2 squared plus log of mu squared divided by p2, p1 plus p2 squared plus logarithm of mu squared divided by p1 plus p4 squared. Okay, plus term of order gr to the power cube. So if I do that, you see that if I fixed the value of the four-point function for a given choice of the PIs, then the four-point function is finite when lambda goes to infinity for any choice of the external momenta p1, p2, p3, and p4. Yes?
Wait.
Yes?
I'm sorry, I forgot the...
Okay. Well, if you find it.
Oh, wait, right. What do we do in the case if the physical mass isn't zero, though?
If we do, if the physical mass is not equal to zero, I'm not going to treat that because I don't have time. But basically, this doesn't change anything for the four-point function. The four-point function will have a different form. It will be more complicated because it will be a function both of mu and p and of the mass. But it will still be finite. And it will still be finite, remember, because the logarithmic divergence we are treating by this randomization procedure come from the behavior of this Feynman amplitude when the k are large. And so when the k are large, the mass doesn't play a role. So the mass correction to this bubble diagram are finite. Yes?
So that renormalized theory, is it like a temporary theory with the wrong constants until we find the correct ones? And then should we rewrite like the real action in terms of our real physical mass?
No, that's the opposite. That's the opposite. The renormalized action is the correct action to use in the functional integral. It's
the
correct action.
Isn't that the bare mass, the bare?
So.
Oh, okay, I see what you mean.
No.
Okay, so that's not the bare action.
The renormalized action, I will write it explicitly because, okay, we have seen already that the coefficient B here, B is just the m squared term. So B is minus 1 over 4 pi squared, 1 half lambda squared. Okay, so let me, it's a bit messy, so where do I have some color chalk? Yes. So here is the value of B, which is obtained by enforcing this condition. Here is the value of C, which is enforced by enforcing the condition that the value of the four-point function for a given choice of the PI, the choice of reference point where you renormalize the series bin depending on the choice of renormalization energy scales, is given by this one. You see?
Okay, so what I meant was then, is it that the bare action is just a temporary action that isn't physical, it doesn't
consider the starting action here, we started from, it's just the general form of the action.
Okay, but is it like the wrong theory?
In that case, this is the wrong theory because if you replace this by the physical mass and this by the physical mass, you get something which is infinite. So this is the renormalization. The renormalized action is the action you must use in your quantization procedure, here functional integral, in order to get physical quantities, vacuum expectation value of products of operator, which are finite. Okay.
So that's the one that we should be using for any calculations,
yes.
Right?
Yes. Okay. So if I do that, I hope by this explicit calculation that the four-point function is finite, so the four-point function is finite. We have seen already here that the two-point function, gamma 2 of p squared, which was p squared plus 0, it's just p squared because the 0 is finite, and it's 0 at order g renormalized, so it is 0 times g renormalized plus term of order g is finite also. It's obviously finite. And in fact, if you think a little bit more, you will discover that all the, so this is for the point function, this is for the two-point function. You will discover that, for instance, the six-point function, eight-point functions, etc., are also finite. They are finite because, for instance, the irreducible four-point function is given by the diagram like that. This is of order, of course, gr squared. This is of order gr to the power cube. But this is already a one-loop diagram. It means that at classical order, at three levels, there is nothing. So at one-loop order, this is gr squared times an integral of a form d4k over k to the power 6, because you have three propagators. So it is finite. You do not need to renormalize it. And in any way, you cannot renormalize it because the three, the classical contribution, the three-level contribution was zero. So this procedure of fixing B so that the theory is massless and fixing C so that the renormalized cyclic constant is finite fixes all the correlation functions of the theory are finite when lambda goes to infinity. See? And one last thing, of course, you may ask, what about the A term? So in fact, there was a K prime step, which would have been to, why is there no A? In fact, when you renormalize a four-point function, when you renormalize the mass, in fact, that's in general not enough. Because at one loop, in QED, you need to renormalize also the factor A. Here, A has to be taken to be 1 plus you do not need any renormalization at one loop. And you do not need to renormalize the factor A. But this is specific to 5-4 theory at one loop. In general, it's not enough to fix the physical mass to get a finite two-point function. In general, and let me, this is the second one. In general, to get a two-point function of P is finite, to get a two-point function which is finite, you need to specify that the physical mass is finite, and you need to specify that the residue, the coefficient 1 over P squared plus M squared in the two-point function is equal to 1. Remember, this coefficient was something like proportional to the norm of the matrix element of the field operator between the vacuum theory and the one particle state of the theory. And in general, in a theory, in a calculation, this coefficient, when you compute it during perturbation theory, it may contain logarithm of lambda. So if this coefficient do contain logarithm of lambda, it means that you have to absorb the logarithm in the definition of what is the field. And so, but changing the normalized definition of the field, of course, you see, amounts to change this coefficient. Okay. So once you have done that, what you get is that simply that, so if you fix the coefficient to be 1, if you fix the renormalized coupling constant, if you fix the physical mass, then the result is that all the correlation functions of the theory are finite when lambda goes to infinity, of course, when expressed as functions of the physical or renormalized parameters. And those physical or renormalized parameters, there are two of them. There are the renormalized coupling constant and the renormalized mass, let us say, which corresponds to what I call here the physical mass, which in my case is zero in the case considered here. So this is the recipe of renormalization. You see that in order to construct a quantum theory which makes sense, you have to be a little careful in your quantization procedure and, for instance, not to use a naive action like that, but to use an action which is of the form that you expected from the classical theory, but where the coefficient in the action are renormalized. You see? So, of course, at tree level, if you are considering the free theory, or there is, of course, a GR here. At tree level, B equals 0, C equals GR, and A equals 1. But at one loop, B is different from 0, C is different from GR, and A could have been different from 1. It turns out that it's still 1, but that's a peculiarity of the fractal theory. Okay? So that's how we construct a sensible quantum field theory. So let me finish with few remarks before, and we shall discuss renormalization group next time. Yes? There was a question? No? Yes?
So, your recipe for the renormalized theory, but the recipe that we have here is specific to 5-4 theory at one loop?
Yes. Okay. Yes. So, now, let me achieve. This, in fact, works at all orders under perturbation theory. But that's a much more complicated story, but there is a mathematical theorem, which is called, you don't need BP. HZ theorem, which dates, I think, from 49. Well, there are different versions, but that's around the 1915, I think, up to 16, that a definite mathematical proof was given, that these procedures works at all order in perturbation theory. So, perturbation theory. So, it's not just some miracle at one loop. Okay. This works for other theory, like QED. In fact, this renormalization theory was devised to renormalize quantum electrodynamics, and this works also for GF theory, like QCD. Or the standard model, the Weinberg-Salam model. Okay. Uh, So what can I say? Yes, say more. There is something which is almost obvious, but that we have not, you probably have not noticed. Why are there those logs? You see? Why is the polarization of the public concern contains only logs, and the mass contains lambda squared term? This is due to, and this works in fact, because the classical massless phi-4 theory has a property which is called scale invariance. This works because, well, remember, let us consider again the action of the phi-4 theory, the classical action, plus g over factorial 4, phi-4. And think about it in terms of dimensions. X as a dimension of a length. Okay? D over dx as, of course, a dimension of the length minus 1. Since the action is something which appears in the exponential of phi, well, in our system where C equals h bar equals 1, the action S of phi must be dimensionless. Okay? And therefore, in order for this to make sense, you realize that the field must have a dimension. Here you have 4 lengths, here you have minus 2 lengths. So the field must have a dimension of a length to the power minus 1. Okay? And therefore, the Kuprick constant G is also dimensionless. Okay? But this is true only in 4 dimensions. This result is true only in 4 dimensions. In d dimensions, you have here a factor dd of x, the rest being the same. Which means that, well, this is of course true, but in d dimension, the field has a dimension of a length to the power 2 minus d over 2, and the Kuprick constant has a dimension of a length to the power therefore not 4 d minus 4. You see? So in d dimension the Kuprick constant is dimension as a dimension, while in 4 dimension it is dimensionless. And since the Kuprick constant is dimensionless, it means that the theory is scale invariant. It means that if I take a field configuration 5x and I rescale it by considering the configuration phi lambda of x, which is equal to phi of lambda x times lambda to the power minus 1, if I am not mistaken, I found that S of phi is equal to, no, this is lambda. This is, of course, lambda. I find that S of phi is equal to S of lambda phi. Simply because I can make the change of variables. So you see that NG is unchanged. You see? Lambda is, of course, a scale parameter between 0 and infinity. So I just rescale the distance and rescale the field. You see? This means that in four dimensions, the 5-4-3 has an additional invariant. It's not only invariant under Poincaré transformation or Euclidean transformation in the Euclidean theory. It's not only invariant under phi into minus phi, but it has a big symmetry, much bigger symmetry, which is a scale invariant. Okay? But that's for the classical theory. And if the quantum theory would have been scale invariant, then the four-point function would have been not invariant if you change the momentum. If you change p, so you see here I am changing x into lambda x. So it's equivalent to change the momenta into 1 over lambda. The momenta. This is a definition, in some sense, of the four point of the value of the Kupik constant. So if the theory, the quantum theory, was scale invariant, it shouldn't depend on the rescaling of the momenta. But it does, because it contains a log of mu over p squared. So it means that the classical theory is scale invariance, the quantum theory not scale invariant.
What do you mean by classical theory?
The quantum theory means that the correlation function that we compute like that of this theory do not have the classical the property of scale invariance. The classical solution of the 5-4 theory has the property of scale invariant, but expectation value of operator in the quantum theory do not have the property of scale invariance. Yes?
Do you mean for the classical theory, you didn't compute the correction of G and G squared? And then
for,
if you compute no, G and G squared?
No, for the classical theory, there are, of course, no correction. Because for the classical theory, you have no one-loop correction. Remember, I didn't vote h-bar here, because I set h-bar equal 1 everywhere, because I knew, you know, by this rule, that you know that if a diagram has one loop, it's an h-bar correction. So I have this in mind. But if you have that in mind, realize that if in a classical theory, h bar is equal to 0, which means that you don't you just keep the three diagrams. You don't consider the one-loop diagrams. And it is the one-loop diagrams which are dangerous because they give you ultraviolet divergence. So in the classical theory, of course, that's what I said here, a equals 1, b equals 0, or m squared, where m is the math, and c equals g. So you have no need of renormalization. Renormalization is a quantum effect. It means that the physical quantities are not the quantity of the action. Yes? No? Okay. So let me finish. Go back. We have seen that the massless 5-4 theory is scale invariant. But the quantum theory is not. And that's an example of what is called an anomaly. You see that this is the example of an anomaly. It's an example of a symmetry, scale invariance, which is satisfied in classical theory, but which is spoiled by quantum effects. And here it is called the scale anomaly. And tomorrow, we'll see what are the consequences for the theory of the fact that the quantum theory, the quantum 5-4 theory, has a scale anomaly. And this leads us to the context of renormalization. Oh. Okay? Yes?
Sorry, when you wrote S5 equals S lambda phi, did you mean lambda phi sub lambda or phi sub lambda?
I'm sorry. This is phi. I'm sorry, I'm very sorry. I must be tired. This is, of course, that for any field configuration, the action of the field configuration is equal to the action of phi lambda. So it feels, for instance, that if phi is a classical solution, then the solution of the minus Laplacian plus n squared phi g for the factor of 3 phi 3 to 0, the classical solution, then it means that if phi is a solution of the classical solution, then phi of lambda is also a classical solution. You see? Yes, I'm very sorry. This is, of course, a classical symmetry is a transformation on the field which doesn't change the action. And when you have seen in the course in QFT1, when you have symmetry, you have conserved currents. You have a charge and you have conserved current because you have no third theorem. But so there is in fact a current associated to scale invariance. But in the quantum theory, you have an anomaly. Yes?
For the scale invariant, I mean the S5 phi lambda.
Yes.
I mean for the mass S5-4 theory, right?
Yes.
I can always rescale the phi lambda, phi x to the lambda phi lambda x, and the S5 is keep invariant.
No. No, you can do that only in four dimensions.
Yeah, for a four-dimensional case. But, so I'm still... don't understand what's the difference between, you see here, the classical is the scale invariance and the quantum does not.
No. Okay, I will explain that later in detail tomorrow. But what I mean is that the fact that you have logarithm here, you have to be treated by renormalization, in fact, implies that this property of scale invariance is be broken. Another way to say that is that if you have a symmetry, you have a conserved current, g mu. So that's g mu is equal to zero.
Yeah.
Okay? In a classical theory, g mu is just a current. It's a quantity. It's a vector. In a quantum theory, as any observable, g mu becomes an operator with depend on x. And you may ask whether, as an operator, d mu of g mu is equal to zero. And you will find that in the quantum theory, the divergence of the current associated scale invariance is different from zero.
But
and you cannot make this equal to zero.
But do you change the action in the quantum and the classical case? No.
No. Well, but changing the action a priori for any classical action of this form, if V is equal to zero, the theory has a property of scale invariance.
Yes.
So the property doesn't depend on the on the Kublik constant. You
see? So what do you mean by quantum theory is not scale invariant?
Okay, I will explain that tomorrow. I try to give you a guess of what it means, but so for the moment, just keep in mind that the classical theory is scale invariant. Okay, that I think you understand. And tomorrow I will show you how and why the quantum theory is not scale invariant and what it means physically, what it implies physically. Yes.
So is this just? So you say the classical theory is scale invariant. Is it
yes.
just the 5-4 theory? For example,
yeah, here this is for 5-4 theory in 4 dimension. Now, of course, it's a specific theory it's a specific case. But for instance, QED, quantum electrodynamics, for massless electrons, is also scale invariance classically.
I'm just asking. So, for example, is the 5-4-5? If there is a 5-3 theory, then it is not scale invariant.
No. In fact, if you have a theory which is d phi squared plus g phi 3, for instance, it is scale invariant. You can do the same calculation, but then you will discover that it is scale invariant in d equals 6.
Okay.
If you have a phi 6 theory, it is scale invariant in D equals 3. And it's just, this is valid, so phi has this formula in general, and the theory is scale invariant when this coefficient is equal to 0.
Okay, so when the coupling constant is dimensionless, that's when the theory is scale invariant.
Yes.
Okay.